Tell us about those jobs. Yeah.
Hi, my name is Ed Savage. I work over at Deutsche Bank in Cary. We have a new software development facility. Well, it's been there about a year. We got about 160 people. We're supposed to be staffing up to about 320 by next year. We have positions right now in UX, UI, development. So if you're a UI type person, we have those. Kind of technology agnostic right now for those type of positions, so it doesn't matter if you're C-sharp, Java, or whatever. And I think we're also going to be looking for some agile scrum masters, too.
Thanks. Any other employers?
Yeah. Hey, my name is Phil Wilshire. I just arrived here about a month ago, and I was kindly employed by a company called Hadron Networks. They are looking at a major Linux trust. So basically anyone, especially in the embedded space, I'm a 10-year veteran of the embedded Linux world, come and I'll give you my card, and if you're interested, they are going to be hiring some more people in the new year. So they're looking for an embedded graphics specialist right now, but I don't know whether there's anyone of those around here.
All right. Any employees you are seeking work and would like to make a pitch for yourself right now?
Hey, my name is Alexi. I moved here from D.C. a couple of months ago because my girlfriend's going to state. I had a job I was telecommuting to, but that is over now, so I'm looking for systems engineering work. I got about 7 years experience in C, 5 years in Perl, Linux, Solaris, various architectures. I like to work as close to the hardware as possible. I've got resumes if anyone's interested.
All right. Anyone else seeking work? Want to stand up and make a pitch right quick? Going once? Going twice? All right. With that, so as soon as he gets his audio up here, we'll have Adam Drew talking about.
Can everybody hear me?
All right. There we go.
Okay. Is the volume all right? All right. Hello, everyone. My name is Adam Drew, and I'm here to talk to you a little bit about music production with free and open source software. I just totally forgot my entire presentation. I'm here to talk to you a bit about free and open source software and music production. I want to thank Trilog for having me here tonight. And all of you guys for coming out and hearing this. I know that Linux is a bit of a niche, and music production at home is a bit of a niche, so we're a niche within a niche at the right now. So thank you all for coming out and listening to tonight. And I also want to thank Zoma and Signal. He's the one who goaded me to do this. I never would have gotten up in front of a whole bunch of people and talked about really much of anything, but he said, no, you got to do this, you got to show people. And so that's what I'm doing here. So a little bit about me. I've been playing music with computers for about 15 years now. I started when I was a kid. I started with mod trackers on MS-DOS. Does anybody remember mod trackers? Yeah, they were like step input text-based music production pieces of software. They looked like spreadsheets. They were about as creative as them. And so that's where I got my start, and I just loved it, and I've just kept up with it. Since then, I've worked on Windows, Mac OS X, Linux. I've worked with all the big software, proprietary and free, so Pro Tools, Mark of the Unicorn, Digital Performer, Logic, all that kind of stuff. But about 2 years ago, I came to work here at Red Hat, doing cluster and file system support. And I got really interested in free and open source software. And over the time that I've been here, it stopped being something that I just worked with and started being something that I was really passionate about. And so I felt kind of weird that I lived my whole life in Linux, except for the Mac and the studio. That felt kind of weird to me. And so about a year ago, I decided I need to understand this. I need to know how to do this. I need to know how to do my passion with free and open source software. So I've spent about the past year with the goal of getting as proficient as I was with non-free tools. And I'm happy to report that I'm actually a better musician and producer with non-Free Tools than I was with Free Tools. I'm sorry, with Free Tools than I was with non-Free Tools. They're not just good tools, they're the best I've ever used. They bring the whole Unix philosophy of modularity, of little tools doing things well and then working together in a way that the big proprietary applications just can't do. And so that's why I've really wanted to get out and talk to people who are interested in Linux and free software to show you how accessible this stuff is. You know, you whatever distro you run, this stuff is available to you. You know, this is something that you could be doing at home, and who doesn't love to play a little music? So this past year, I gave this talk at Trilog, and the beginning of the talk was all about what is free and open source software, right? I was giving it to an audience of musicians, but not necessarily people who know anything about free and open source software. But when I was preparing for this one, I thought, you guys know this part. So instead, I'm going to spend a little bit of time talking about basic music production techniques and concepts. I'm not going to go really deep, but basically I just want to spend a little time getting you guys familiar with some of the jargon that I'm going to use when we're actually looking at the tools. Or otherwise, I'm afraid that, you know, it just won't make any sense. There's dozens and dozens, if not hundreds of tools that a typical producer uses when working in digital audio. But I've tried to distill it down to four things that I think you'll see in any rig, in any kind of production rig. And that's a low latency audio system, digital audio workstation, real-time effects, and sound synthesis. And so I want to get a little into what each of those things mean. So a low latency audio subsystem is a low level, meaning close to the kernel, audio driver, audio API, whatever you want to say, that allows for transporting audio through the computer. So from your instrument to your hardware, from your hardware through the software stack up to user space to be affected, to be listened to be monitored, back down through the hardware, through the kernel, through your output into your ears. That takes time. Audio is big. You know, in daily life we tend to think of audio as being small. We think of OGG files and MP3s. We think about 3 minutes, 3 megabytes for a 4 minute song. Uncompressed raw audio is 10 megabytes per second, give or take. When we're talking about multiple streams of audio, we're talking about chewing through a lot of data all at once. And so all of a sudden, latency starts to become a problem. What is latency? Latency is the amount of time it takes to get the signal through the whole hardware and software stack and back out to your ears. If you're playing guitar and you hit a chord and it takes 50 milliseconds for the sound to come back to you, you're going to know. It's going to feel weird. It's not going to be anybody who's ever done karaoke. There's been a terrible delay. You start singing real slow and it feels weird. It's like that. So it's the job of a low latency audio subsystem to make sure you're running as fast as possible with as little delay as possible. The next part of a audio production rig is a digital audio workstation. So that is the piece of software that allows you to tie all of your audio together. You know, so a song is comprised of a series of tracks. There's a drum track, a guitar track, a bass track, another guitar track, a vocal track, et cetera, et cetera. You need one application to take all of that audio, to mix that audio so that each instrument is at the right level, you know, not drums way up in the mix and you can't hear the guitar, to house all that, to mix all that, and to bring it all together into a single composition. And that's the job of a digital audio workstation. They're also typically called a DAW. I'll probably call it that. The next important part is real-time effects. If you've ever heard just an electric guitar plugged into an amp with no effects and no distortion, it's pretty boring. Real-time effects allow the system to change the sounds, of the instruments, to make them more pleasing, or to make them sound exotic or strange, or whatever you want to do in real time. So while you're playing the guitar in that less than 5 milliseconds of latency, it's actually changing and modifying the sound. And that's pretty impressive. But now think about that across 16 tracks, with each track with 3 or 4 effects stacked up on top of each other. That's really impressive. And so real-time effects are a cornerstone of modern digital audio production. It used to be you had to have this big rig of gear to send all your audio through. Now we can do it in software. Finally, the last thing is sound synthesis. Sound synthesis is the act of creating sound from nothing but algorithms. Okay, so when you do sound playback, you know, for example, when we talk about recording drums or something like that, or guitar, somebody's playing something, the computer is recording it, like a tape recorder or whatever, and playing it back. Synthesis is the act of creating new sounds that we're not recording. So what the system is doing is using an algorithm. That algorithm may be modeled after circuits in an old 1970s or 1980s analog synthesizer, or it may be a modern digital algorithm. But either way, it's going to use a set of tone generators to generate sound, and then a set of filters to change that sound, a set of amplification envelopes to change the dynamics of the sound, so to make it fade in or fade out. And by applying these things in different ways, like different ingredients, you can create different sounds. So from nothing, you can create a piano or a synthesizer sound. These four things are the basic cornerstones, the basic building blocks of a digital audio production rig. Well, that makes sense? Pretty good? All right. So why is free software, you know? All right, so music software sounds cool. We're all sold. Why is free software particularly important for music production? Free software is important for music production because I want you to think about the worst proprietary software you know, the most restrictive, you know, selling client licenses and the software. You know, I want you to think of all that sort of stuff, and I guarantee you, music software is worse. I guarantee you, okay? I've compiled a tiny list that contains some of the things that you may be familiar with if you've ever used proprietary music software. We've got, let's see, non-interoperability, arbitrary hardware bundling, that's always a great one. You can only use our software with our computer. Dongles and copy protection, you've got two USB ports and you have to use them both to hook up these little things that do nothing but let you use the software. All of this kind of stuff is rampant in the audio world to a degree that would actually be quite shocking to the audience. Why? Because we're not there watching out. This is the domain of people who are not technology enthusiasts. This is the domain of people who are using software because they went to college and learned that software as part of their job, and that's what they know. And I think free software is particularly important here because this is not how you do art. You don't do art by telling people that they can't share. You know, if I wanted to give, you know, a set of strings to my buddy because I like the way they sound, I can do that. But I can't give him my guitar effects processing program. That just doesn't compute. I don't understand. And so I think free software is important not just because it's cool, not just because the tools are available or because it's cheap or whatever, but because there are bigger issues at stake here. And if we want to talk about things like getting people interested in playing music young. I mean, digital music production teaches some pretty critical skills. Using computers, taking things apart, hearing something, and learning how to logically make that happen yourself. When the software is $600 and the computer is $2,500 and the upgrade is $90 a year, how can you set up a lab for kids in a school? How? You can't. So I think it's critical. You know, it's more than just cool software. And so with that, with all the background and all that stuff, I'd like to actually show you guys some software. But before I do that, I'd like to plug my laptop in, because I think it's going to die. All right, you guys are good sports. So first, let me talk a little bit, briefly, about the hardware I have here. For the laptop, I've got a Dell Studio 15-something. It's got a Core i5 in it, two cores, two something gigahertz, I don't even pay attention anymore. 4 gigabytes of RAM, half a terabyte of hard drive, not exactly blow the walls off equipment. This sort of middle of the road equipment is perfect for music production nowadays. 10 years ago, music production was high dollar. But now, buy a computer for $700, you're fine. You don't even have to look at the tag. As far as the rest of the stuff, I've got a MIDI controller here. This doesn't actually produce any sound. It sends control data. So when I hit, you know, a D on it, it tells the computer, Adam just hit a D. We can use this to control software synthesizers that we'll see later. We've got these monitor speakers. They're little and they're not loud, but they produce a very flat sound. When you're mixing, you don't want artificial lows and highs added. And consumer grade stuff typically adds that to make it sound better. But if you mix for that, you'll find that your mix sounds weird on other stereos. Problem vexed me for years when I was younger. I couldn't figure out why. Get these. We have an audio interface. This offloads some of the work of converting the analog signal from the instruments into a digital signal that you can process and record. It also has the added benefit of sounding a lot better than the mic in on your laptop. And then I have a cheap guitar here. All this stuff, the keyboard, the interfaces, this guy, is all from Best Buy. This isn't high dollar stuff. You could buy, with the exception of the laptop, the studio setup for $500. You could spend $150 a week, get it a month. Yeah? So, yeah, this is an M Audio. I think it's called a Fast Track Pro. Sure. And so it's got a couple of inputs here that can be used for microphones or guitars. It's got MIDI in and out. MIDI is a musical instrument digital interface. It's the control protocol that allows you to transmit note on, note off, and what note you're playing between hardware and software. And then we've got some audio outs here. Like, I've got the audio outs hooked into my monitors. Cool. Any questions about the hardware? Yeah. Yes, sir. There's probably a point to be made there. USB audio hardware is supported fantastically in modern Linux distributions. When I bought this guy, I was expecting a fight. I brought it home ready to put the gloves on. I plugged it in, it worked. Fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. Same thing with this USB. This is USB as well, actually. Same thing. Plugged it in, recognized immediately. Yes?
How does
FireWire do? All right, so I don't have, computers aren't shipping with FireWire so much these days. I know Apple was really into it, and then they dropped it probably about 3 years ago, 2 years ago. I know that there's a driver or a project out there called FFADO, I think. There is a supported hardware list, but I myself have not tried it. USB, I can vouch for.
I would like to have, for the most part, everyone pretty much thought USB. Except me. That's okay. My question was, do you require 44.1?
Yeah. Okay. So I can work at 40. What is it? 48. I can work at 48. I find that most people's listening habits are on CD quality or lower. So, I could work that high. I typically don't. I'd rather get a few extra tracks.
CD quality is fancy.
Anything else, guys?
You mentioned that you use these kind of monitors. What about using headphones for mixing?
So if you're going to use headphones, you want to make sure that there's something reference grade. Like, I have a pair of Sony. Oh, God, I've had them for like 10 years. And I don't remember the name. You want to make sure they're reference grade. Whenever you're mixing on something, you want to make sure that the sound being presented to you is flat as possible. Like I said, if it's artificially increasing the lows or the highs to sound bassier to you or to sound hotter, then when you play it on your stereo, you're going to go, oh, where's all the high? What happened?
So if you're looking for headphones, like, I know a lot of them quote, like, a range of frequencies, whether it's kind of a reasonably high response.
So the problem, there, almost anything consumer grade is going to run 20 to 20, 20 hertz to 20,000 kilohertz or 20,000 hertz or something. That almost means nothing. Because, all right, so that's the frequency response of the actual physical driver in it, the actual speaker. But the problem is the way it produces the range of those sounds. So it may be able to do 20 to 20, right? But it may do 30 really high, and then 40 low, and then 60 high, and then 100 high. So it creates this sort of envelope. So that's the problem. You typically, when you're looking for either monitors or monitoring headphones, it'll say the word monitor on it. I guess that's kind of like the music in word to let you know. Is there anything else about the hardware, guys? Okay, so let's move on to the fun stuff. Basically, I was just trying to impress that the hardware is very, very off the shelf. Did you have one more question?
I just wanted to reinforce what you said about you can't go by statistics on paper for frequency range and
gain and loss and that kind of thing, you actually have to listen to them.
Mm-hmm.
Because the same manufacturer has such a great range of quality headphones.
When you want to get really serious, you should mix on multiple, you should have multiple monitoring sources. You should be able to have two or three sets of monitors and maybe two or three sets of headphones and listen to your mix, but I just do it at home.
Okay.
Anything else, guys, about the hardware?
All
right, cool. Let's move on to the software. So, this is going to be a little weird because I have to go over there. Okay. So, the first thing I'm going to do is bring up a program called Jack. I could do that, yeah. Good idea, Jamie. Hold on a second, guys. See what happens.
So, are you running a standard distribution there, or is it like some goodies upon?
You know, thank you for reminding me. So, okay, what I am running is, all right, so I am running Fedora 14 with a little bit of Red Hat special sauce because I'm really excited about RHEL 6. The most important part when you're talking about your distribution is the kernel. This is the most important part. So you can see I'm running the 2633.7 real time. Okay, so Fedora ships 2635, maybe? Does that sound right? Yeah, so I think Fedora 14 is 2635. Fedora does not currently package a real-time kernel. And I'm going to get into why real-time is important in a second. But Fedora does not currently package a real-time kernel. Ubuntu has historically packaged a real-time kernel. They currently do not as of 10.10. They plan to as of 11.4. The real-time kernel is important for music production on Linux. It's kind of a requirement. The reasons are purely historical. Back in the Pentium 4 days, in order to eke out a little bit more performance, they said, all right, we'll use the determinism in the real-time kernel to allow the low-latency audio subsystem to do like a callback-style API. So it's using the determinism in the kernel in order to kind of keep track of what application should be calling back with audio data at a given time. Well, that was 10 years ago. Now we're just kind of stuck with the real-time kernel. The hardware is powerful enough to do this on its own. But unfortunately, the API is written around this. I know that there's work upstream in the Jack project, and we'll talk about Jack in a minute, to move away from this. But for now, real-time is the albatross around every free and open source software music producer's neck. The easiest thing to do is to build your own real-time kernel, which is shockingly easy. And I'm going to talk about that at the end of the presentation. But mostly Fedora 14. Yeah?
So it adds the API when you use a real-time kernel. Are there any negatives to using a real-time kernel?
So I don't recommend using the real-time kernel day-to-day.
Okay.
I boot into the real-time kernel when I'm doing audio work, and I boot out of it when I'm just doing normal photos and home stuff. The reason why is some stuff acts a little weird on the real-time kernel. One, you guys might have heard of this software. There have been a few problems with it. Something called Flash. That doesn't seem to like the real-time kernel. Another piece of software, which I actually adore, but gets some bad press that also has a hard time with the real-time kernel, is Pulse Audio. So the real-time kernel is not something I would recommend just booting into every day and rolling with it. I recommend booting back and forth. It's a bit of a hassle, but what are you going to do? So, all right, I have a mess on my screen. Hold on here, guys. So the first thing I'm going to talk about tonight is something called Jack. Jack stands for the Jack Audio Connection Kit in the best free software recursive acronym tradition. It tells you nothing about what it is in the name. This on the screen is not Jack, because Jack is a daemon and there's nothing to show. This is a program called QJack Control. This allows you an easy graphical way to start and stop Jack. Jack is the low-latency audio subsystem for Linux. It's a standard at this point. It's been around, I believe, about 10 years. It was designed specifically for pro audio applications. Jack is special because of that determinism and because of that callback API I alluded to a second ago. The other reason why it's special is because it's a routing API. Okay, so Jack allows you to route audio from anywhere to anywhere. And it puts no limits on how many times you do it or where you do it or what. In Linux music production, it's all about small tools that do small jobs and do them well. You have a drum machine. You have an effects processor. You have a digital audio recorder. Jack allows you to link all those up. You can think of it sort of like redirecting in the terminal. When you redirect the output from one command into another command, well, I can redirect the audio from one application into another application. It's Jack that allows that. It's Jack that also provides the ultra-low latency that you need as a musician. I run here at about 5.8 milliseconds latency stable. To put that into perspective, if you were to stand next, if you were to take an electric guitar and plug it into a guitar amplifier and stand about 6 feet away, in a normal temperature room, due to the speed of sound, you'd incur about 12 milliseconds of latency. So 5.8 is so low that it's imperceptible to you. To the computer, it's a lifetime. But to us, we can't tell. And so Jack is what makes that all happen. If we look at all the parts here up at the top left, this is where you can start and stop Jack. The bottom here is just sort of messages from the daemon when it's starting and stopping. And up at the right there is the connections window. That's going to be important. That's where we'll actually do the audio routing from one application to another. So let's go ahead and start Jack up. First thing I'm going to do is just jump into setup and make sure that it's pointing to my USB device. Oh, and this is the setup window. One of the things about Jack is it takes some tuning to get it working in your environment. But once it works, you really don't have to mess with it much.
Can you tell us something quick about that interface? You
sure.
Hardware 1.1. How did you know that that was the USB device that you plugged in?
It says USB audio. I mean, there's an important thing to note there. To save space a little bit, you can see that there's two things there. It's a Fast Track Pro and USB Audio 1. Those actually map to the two sets of outputs on the back. You can mix and surround sound if you wanted to. So I'm going to start it. And everybody cross their fingers. Boom. Okay. So now Jack has started. Not really impressive. But now we have the ability to start working with Pro Audio applications. So let's get into the meat. I'm going to be a little constrained with this resolution. These tools take up big screen real estate. I work on a 21-inch monitor at home when I'm working on music. But I'll do my best. So this is Hydrogen. Let me properly full screen this. Hydrogen, and let me make sure I have some sound. Hydrogen is a drum machine. Hydrogen's job is to, or Hydrogen's purpose in life is to allow you to create rhythm tracks for your songs. Hydrogen can be as complicated or as simple as you want. You can create a simple one bar, 4/4 beat, play it over and over again, or you can go nuts and really try to reproduce your favorite Neil Peart drum solo. It allows you to use a pattern-based music production style, which means you create patterns of music, which are simple, just sort of like scripts telling the system when to play specific pieces of sound. So when to play a bass drum sound, when to play a snare drum sound, etc. Then you can chain those up together to make songs. We can see down here that this is a pattern. Each one of these dots represents a note on event. So at that dot, it's going to cue off this sample. So for example, here's a kick. Each one of the, and can you guys hear that back there?
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Each one of these dots here represents an instance where it's going to hit a kick. This is a snare, a jazz snare. This is a tom. And so if we play in pattern mode, it's going to play this pattern over and over again. But one pattern over and over and over again is pretty boring sometimes. Sometimes it's cool. I like Ministry, so I can listen to the same pattern over and over again. But most of the time it's boring. So what you do is you then take these patterns and chain them together and lay them on top of each other. That's how you create new and unique songs. So you can see at the top here, that's not going to move down. This is where all the patterns are strung together. So we can see this is the pattern that we just played. Here's another pattern, here's another. And by stringing them together and laying them on top of each other, we can make things happen on an interval. So we can play through some of the songs. And so it's running through and playing all these different patterns and mixing the sounds and patterns together to produce the drum line. These are not synthesized. These are collections of samples. These samples are Creative Commons licensed. You can usually get them in pretty much any distribution. Additionally, the application Hydrogen has the ability to go out and crawl the internet for samples. People can create sample packs, which are aggregations of their favorite samples. So you can create 808 kit, 909 kit, whatever. We can see down here we have some control over specific properties of the individual sounds. And we have a sound library here, so you can look at different sounds. Here's an 808. And so, for example, you could start a new song. You could load the 808. Here we go. Let's just program a. I'm doing this randomly, well, semi-randomly, guys. So no promises on, and then that simple, we've got a pattern. And then you could create a fill. So, maybe we want to add some excitement to the end. Let's find a symbol. And so what we can do is we can have that, so it's going to play that first pattern over and over and over again, but every second instance of the pattern, it's going to play this fill pattern I just did. So let's throw it in song mode. So you can see by chaining these together, you can create your own compositions, as complicated or as simple as you want. The other part, let's show you a little bit about how Jack works. So now we can start to talk about some of that redirection. We can see that now that we have Hydrogen open, Hydrogen shows with a client in Jack. And the audio out from Hydrogen is actually hooked into the audio in on my system. So we're routing the audio from Hydrogen to the system. Pretty simple. It's like working with real gear. Well, let's see that with data. So over here, yes.
So when Hydrogen opened, it sent a message to the Jack daemon saying, hello, I'm here.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and because the entire free and open source music community has standardized on Jack, all this stuff works together. Fantastic. All right, so let's look in the ALSA sources, and we can find my Key Studio. It even reports the right name. And we can hook the Key Studio up to Hydrogen. Hopefully I have the octave, right? And you can play it right there from your keyboard.
You show the GUI Hydrogen while you play it?
Yeah. I don't think it's going to show anything interesting, but... You can. I'm not going to show it because it's difficult.
Okay.
I knew I'd get that question tonight. You can. So if you prefer to actually play your patterns and record them back, you can. And it can do a real cool trick called quantization. Thank you. And that allows it to take your messy human timing and turn it into digital perfection and fix your mistakes. So that's Hydrogen. What I hope I impressed upon you here with Hydrogen is, did you notice it does one thing? It does drums. That's it. In the proprietary music world, this guy would, do your laundry and file your taxes, and it would be everything. But this is a drum machine. This is the best drum interface I've ever used. Because in proprietary software, this is an afterthought. This is a feature. This here, this is a community's project. This is what they care about. That's awesome. So let's show you some other stuff. Am I running too long? All right, so the next thing I'd like to show you guys is something called Zin. It's actually called Zin Add Sub Effects, but that rolls off the tongue. Well, it just doesn't. So I just call it Zin. Zin is a synthesizer. So remember earlier I talked about sound synthesis? Zin is a synthesizer. Zin allows you to create sounds out of nothing. It also allows you to create sounds out of other people's sounds, which is easier than creating them out of nothing. What we can do is we can hook the audio output from Zin into the audio input of another application, or just to the audio output of the system, and hook the keyboard in. So let's do that. Run back over to Jack. Let's hook the audio out from Zin into this here. Oh, and let's do the... Let's see, Key Studio. So now that's a pretty basic sound. That's sort of like the hello world. Good morning. But here's where we can start to have some fun with it. Zin Add Sub Effects has it comes standard with a huge bank of sounds that have been contributed by people from all over the world. They're really cool. You'll notice Zin is all about synthy sounds. It's not about natural sounds. Zin doesn't do piano. Zin doesn't do acoustic guitar. Zin does bass lines. Zin does squelchy, you know, 303s. Zin is a cool tool, but it has its place. I love it. So let's take a look at some of these instruments. Let's show the instrument bank. You can see the instrument bank is divided into subsections. So we have drums, guitar. These are all very synthy sounds. You'll see what I mean. Let's pull one open. And I want to show you some of the fun of changing sounds with Zin. So let's take a look at this. It's called, I think, soft synth. So it's like an analog string, you know? That's pretty neat. Okay. But let's say you're looking for more of a bass sound. Let's say you're looking for more of a low-end analog monosynth. Let's turn this sound into that sound. We're going to come over here, and we're going to switch from polyphonic to legato. I think legato is Italian for sound school. Not sure what it actually means. I know that it switches it into a mono mode, meaning that when I hit one key and then I hit another key, it cancels out the previous key press. You'd say, why would you want to do that? Well, that's how bass guitar and stuff works. So it's good for simulating bass lines. Then what we're going to do is turn on portamento. Portamento is when you hit a key and then you hit another key, instead of automatically jumping to that note, it transitions smoothly. And so let's actually edit the instrument a little deeper here. Look at that. Yeah. Room full of geeks. Look at that. Let's turn the cutoff up. And now, remember when I played a second ago? I haven't loaded a new sound. When I played a second ago, we were looking at, you know, more of a string kind of sound. Now it sounds like this. Completely different. Pretty cool. So one of the great things about Zin is it can introduce you to synthesis concepts. We can see anybody who's familiar with synthesis here, we can see the bread and butter things. We've got amplitude, we've got an amplitude low frequency oscillator, we've got a filter, we've got an envelope for that filter. We've got a whole bunch of tone control. We can look at the voice list, so we can actually control the waveforms of the individual component parts that are going into the sound. It'll let you go as deep as you want, but it will also let you stay as simple as you want. So a few button presses, and you go from Yanni to Trent Reznor. Pretty cool.
So let's say you spent like 2 hours tweaking this, and is there like an easy way to save that as a new instrument?
No. No, of course there is. You can save all you can save all of your own instruments, and you can save them in banks.
Okay.
You can share them really easily. Other programs can actually load them. A program that you might not have time to look at tonight, but I'll try to fit in, called the Linux Multimedia Studio, can actually read Zin data. and play those sounds within itself. You know, this is all open. You know, there's nobody stopping you from incorporating Zin into your application. So Zin is almost sort of a standard at this point. It's been around for a while, and it is really powerful. So I think I'm just going to play a couple of just random sounds out of it. Let's see. You want to hear the roads? All right. Which roads? You want the DX7 so we can sound sort of like, you know, Martin Gore? Oh, let me turn off Portamonto and Legato. We can also look at, you know, look at all these, just one category, all these different kinds, you know. You can see there's lots of strings and things like that. Everyone is looking to cover Depeche Mode. So you can see there's
Is there a way to trigger which instrument Zin is using from somewhere other than the GUI?
Yes, and in fact, what you can do is you can build up. This goes a little further than I've played with it. So the way I typically use Zin is I bring up a patch and I record myself playing it live. But let's say you're really into MIDI. You know, some people are really into MIDI sequencing. Typically people who are much better keyboard players than me. What you can do is you can set up a bank. So I think like a 16 or 128 channels where you can set a different patch to each channel. And then your MIDI sequencer can say, not just I'm playing C, but I'm playing C on channel 1, and that's the Rhodes. Or I'm playing, you know, D sharp on channel 5, and that's the snare drum. So yeah, you can build these banks, and you can control them from any other Jack-aware application. Yep.
Is there a way to combine sounds?
Yes, so you can do layering. So that's where, so we just talked about taking sounds and putting them in different channels to be triggered independently. But you can also layer sounds on top of each other to trigger them at the same time. Are there any other questions about Zin? What about hydrogen? I don't know if I asked you guys if you had any questions about hydrogen. Any questions about anything? Okay.
Button on the main
You'll see that a lot in music software. The panic button. So, who here has ever fallen prey to a recursive grep? I have. Grep for a word that, and then you're redirecting the output from the grep into a file in the same directory you're grepping. Right. Takes you like 5 minutes notice when you realize your results haven't come back. You can do the same thing with synthesis. You can start getting into these feedback loops where you're feeding the output of one tone generator into the input of another and so on and so forth, and then your wife comes knocking at the door because it sounds like there's aliens in the computer. That's what the panic button is. Anybody else have any questions about this or about synthesis in general? Okay. So let's move on to my favorite piece of software. Actually, no. Let's not. Let's move on to one of my favorite pieces of software. This is Rack-A-Rack. Rack-A-Rack has one purpose in life, and that is to be a professional-grade guitar multi-effects processor. A guitar multi-effects processor, if you go down to the music store and purchase it, is a good $700,000-$800,000, depending on what you're going for, something with multiple pedals on the floor that can chain effects any which way you want. And all is supposed to be done, this tiny little one-line screen. Those are big money. This does all the same stuff on your computer for free. And so what it allows you to do is take the input from your guitar and affect it and change it to make it sound differently. So let's take a little look at that. You see, getting kind of used to the workflow here, we're going to connect. Oh, wait. So some applications auto-connect. You can see Rack-A-Rack connected itself. But we should be able to just pick up my guitar and give it a shot. Okay. One thing I need, guitar pick. Okay. This might jangle around a bit. How's that? Okay.
Can you really show anything?
Yeah, so here's what we're going to do. So this is unaffected guitar. Oh, wedding ring comes off. Too difficult. So unaffected, nothing to it, right? So when you come in here to the bank, we can pick one of these effects. So let's pick true heavy. Let's turn on the effect. Completely different, right? Let's try some others here. And I mean, there are. Where's that? I don't see that.
Fourth one on the left.
Oh. Yeah, weird. You can get weirder than that. I'll show you one of my favorites here. Where is it? Do you guys see one that's a symphony name? They're not.
This one is the second column, about six
down. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Who likes Pink Floyd? Check this out. So this is, you know, I'm playing a guitar here, but we're going to make it sound like a synthesizer. So if you're somebody who maybe isn't into producing music, you know, maybe you want to record something like a simple four track at home, but you love to play guitar, probably a better guitarist than you. Oops, sorry guys. This would be something where you could bring this up and plug your guitar in and then all of a sudden have an infinite world of sounds. And each one of these patches that we're looking at here, each one of these presets, is actually made up of all these effects. You see each one of these things, say like expander, sustainer, overdrive. So each one of those patches is actually a collection of saved settings of all these individual effects. And in fact, each one of these patches has a different combination of effects. So it's not like, yes?
So if you create your own messing around on the front end, you can save it and it ends up in that unorganized list.
I think the patches, so whenever I've saved them, I've just loaded them, you know, from the file from Nautilus. I think you could probably save them in a bank, but I haven't done that. What you can just save them to your hard drive, save them somewhere in your home folder, and then back them up or something like that.
Okay.
How many loops have you got on there?
What do you mean?
How many tracks have you put on loops?
I haven't done a lot of like looping or like delay or anything like that with this tool. Mostly I do amp simulation with it. Yeah, so I don't have an amp at home. I do everything in software, you know. And you can yeah.
Well, do you have any recommendations for like Stompbox, like USB connections, where you could actually stomp on it?
Well, so I haven't seen. Hold on, let me turn this off here. I haven't seen a dedicated USB Stompbox, but anything, almost everything in these applications can be controlled from some kind of trigger via MIDI or via USB. So one of the pieces of gear that I didn't bring here tonight, because I didn't know a good way to show it off, was I have a mixing board. Connects via MIDI. And then I'm able to control the volumes of different tracks, or I'm able to control the amount of effects, or I can assign any knob that's in software to this hardware. So something like that may work. I think that would be a great build-it-yourself project. I've never seen a dedicated stomp box, but I don't see that it wouldn't be something you couldn't hack together by taking apart other stuff. Any other questions? No, Rack-a-Rack? So I think this would be, you know, if you're, let's say you're a guitarist, there's got to be more than a couple guitarists in this room. This is a really good starting point. You know, you set up Jack, you set up Rack-A-Rack, and Jack, if you're working with one application, you can probably get away with not messing with the kernel and just doing a yum install or an apt-get, and get Rack-A-Rack, get Jack, and play with it. See what working with software effects is like. Yes?
Yeah, right now you've got your guitar. Is that audio output into the... How is the guitar beat?
So the guitar is hooked by a standard quarter-inch audio cable into the audio input of the M-Audio box.
Okay.
And then the M-Audio has a digital audio converter on it that's doing the work of actually taking the audio and turning it into 44.1 mono wave data.
Okay.
They're transferring that via the USB cable into the system. That's where it's getting picked up by the USB audio driver in the kernel and then presented to user space via Jack.
Thank you.
And you could patch Rack-A-Rack on the other side of Zim, too.
Correct. All right, so you could take, to use Rack-A-Rack, to use Zim's filters, but Zim primarily provides audio out.
Mm-hmm.
What you could do is, say, use Rack-A-Rack to hook into the next piece of software I'm going to show you, which is Ardour, which is the digital audio workstation that really ties all this together. So you've been seeing these individual, and that's a good segue, I think. You've been seeing all these individual pieces, a drum machine, you've seen a synthesizer, you've seen a guitar effects suite, but how do you turn this into a song? And Ardour is where that's going to happen. Before I move on to that, does anybody have any additional questions about any of the tools that we've seen thus far? Okay.
Just in general, you said go out and find it, but how do you do that? Where do I look?
I am going to cover that in depth at the end of the talk. There's a really great community out there. IRC is awesome for this stuff. And I've actually put together, the Fedora project has done something really incredible this past release that I'll show to you guys. The Ubuntu Studio community has something great out there, and I've put something together for these talks that I think might be helpful. We'll get to that at the end. Any other questions?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know of any live CDs that have a real-time kernel on them?
Yeah, so older versions of Ubuntu Studio, when I say older, like 9.4, 9.10, I believe the live CD has a real time. There's a music-based distribution that I'm ashamed to admit I don't know much about. It's called Studio 64, or 64 Studio. I get mad if you say it in the wrong order. I believe they ship real time on a distro. You'd have to do some on a live CD. You'd have to do some research here. In my experience, building a real time kernel is so easy that it's worth just giving it a shot. I mean, it's not like you're hurting the system. You just put it in, you boot into it, you boot out. And I'm going to cover that in depth at the end of the talk again, too. So anything else, guys? Okay, so let's move on to my favorite part now. Maybe I should have gotten that.
Over there.
All right, well, I'll be back. All right. We're going to open Project Nauter. You can see a little geek thing here. The name of this project is Unlinked and Reclaimed. Yes, I name my songs after inode states in the global file system. This, ladies and gentlemen, is Ardour. And all right, we're running into a little difficulty here because the resolution is so low, Ardour is getting mad. Let me see if I can up it a little bit. 1024 is as high as we can go.
If you unmirror it, you might be able to go a little higher.
We'll go higher on mine. All right, so here we're going to have to un-full screen it. Bear with me, guys. Sorry. Unforeseen difficulty. Basically, because the minimum size that Ardour will allow you to set it to, if it's in full screen mode, is greater than 1024 by 768. When I hit the window, when it's full screen, it jumps around. I'm sure people with netbooks have experienced that in software before. Okay, so hopefully we're in business. Sorry for that. This is Ardour. Ardour is the digital audio workstation that I use. This is Linux. So this is not the only digital audio workstation. In fact, none of these tools are the only option for their job. Zin is not the only synthesis suite. Rack-A-Rack is not the only guitar effects suite. And Ardor is not the only DAW. This is just what I use. This is what I like. So Ardor is the digital audio workstation that helps us tie all these other things together. Ardor allows us to take audio sources, whether they be software or hardware, and mix them together into cohesive songs. It also allows us to place effects on these individual elements. So we can take a guitar track, we can take a bass track, we can take a drum track that was pretty raw when we originally put it together, and we can, you know, add distortion or reverb or all these great effects that are the things that psychoacoustically make music feel alive when we hear it. So I'm going to get into a little bit of that right now. First, let's look at the UI. Ardor is, as you can see, exceptionally simple. It's I was very intimidated by this program when I first started using it, but it actually is pretty easy once you get the hang of it. On the right here, we can see all of the individual tracks, these sort of colored lines that are going out like this with the waveforms in them. These are actual recordings of me playing different instruments. We can see that we've got distorted guitar tracks. We've got, knowing me, probably more distorted guitar tracks. We've got some other audio. I am really messy and don't always name my tracks, which I'm regretting right now. But you know, we can see we've got some drums, some guitar, some bass. We've also got these other tracks under here. You can see we've got guitar, and here's a guitar, but we've got something under it that looks like the guitar track again. This is called an automation track. Ardor allows you to automate anything in the UI. So let's say you want to have a sound fade in and fade out. Well, you can hook your mixing board up to the fader for that sound, record yourself moving the fader, then when it plays the song back, it'll recreate those motions that you produced when you were, upping and lowering, increasing and lowering that particular thing you were messing with. This is a very powerful tool. Let's start and look at some of the individual tracks. So I'm going to take this drum track and put it on solo. We can start playing it. So now it's just a drum track, but it's actually more than a drum track. This is the mixing window. Each one of these mixing channels corresponds to one of those tracks in the song. So we can see the BU meter running up and down. That's the drum track in the song. So we can look back at the song. Drum track. And where do you think I made that drum track? Hydrogen. Right. I went in, I sequenced this drum track, I sequenced the whole song. Over the course of writing the song, I added more and subtracted, and then brought it in here. We can also see we've got a reverb on it, which is what gives it that sound like it's in a hall. Let's add something else. So that's me playing bass guitar. So I put in the drum track, and came back and played the drum track while I had my bass guitar playing. And I played and recorded it. We can listen to just the bass guitar. So let's stop there.
So you're using your bass, your drum track for your timing.
Right, so I start with the timing. Typically the way I write is I start with either bass guitar is my natural instrument, so that's what I typically write with. But I start usually by having an idea of a rhythm in my head, creating that in hydrogen to the best of my ability, and then start improvising bass over that.
Is there a click track?
No, the click track is your drum track. You could probably do a MIDI click. But my click track is my drum track. So I typically create some kind of drum beat before I start writing notes, and then I work from there.
You could make a click track in hydrogen about 5 seconds.
This is completely true. This
is quite integral to the art as well.
Yes, good eye. I have no idea how to use this, so I will not click the button. I will not click the button that says click.
You hook it up to the jack, and it just clicks in the background. It doesn't record the name.
Okay. So we looked at two of the tracks, the bass and the guitar. Let's look at some of these other tracks. Here are some synths that I did in Zin. modeled that synth after Tom Sawyer. That did a pretty good job. Thank you very much. And then another synth line from playing on top of that. Let's hear that with, let's say, the drum. So the beginnings of a song. Not much, or repetitive synth line, and some drums, but the beginnings of a song. Let's see how the bass guitar factors in there. And let's look back at the mixer. See the fader control, the relative volume of that track. But we can do a lot more than just, that's four tracks. We can do a lot more. Let's skip ahead a little.
I have a quick question going back to Rack-A-Rack.
Okay.
The, you know, for real guitar effects boxes, they're frequently tuned for either guitar or bass.
Mm-hmm.
Does Rack-A-Rack, is there some way where you can tell it, okay, you're getting a bass input, so you need to focus on these frequencies as opposed to...
Rack-A-Rack is definitely, in my own experimentation with it with my bass guitar, Rack-A-Rack is definitely geared towards guitar, but there's definitely no artificial constraints. Like, there's a big, let's say, 123 band EQ that you can really tune what it's going to, it's going to listen on anything in 44.1, but you can really tune what it responds to. You probably wouldn't want to start with a guitar distortion for a bass because it would sound really chunky and weird. But if you created your own sort of subtle, maybe throw a little compressor in front of it and then a little amp simulation, it might sound pretty good. That was a really long way of saying yes. So let's look at a lot more tracks piled on top of each other. So for example, let's take a look at this song from the beginning. The first thing I bring in is, I'm a fan of kind of found sound and machine noises. So the first thing I'm going to bring in is I fade the song in with some samples of machines that I gathered from freesound.org, Creative Commons licensed sounds that people record and donate. I took these, I cut them up into pieces, treated them, pitched them down, panned them out, put them in hydrogen to create this rhythmic pattern. Well, go back to the story. Then we bring in the song. So there are the tracks that you were hearing a minute ago. So we've got the drums, the machine sounds, the bass guitar, and the two synth tracks. And so that's how we pick up the beginning. And then we can skip ahead a little bit to where the chorus comes in. We have the chord change, and I bring in a synth. And I'll play it, and then I'll solo the synth, and then I'll add it back into the mix. There's the portamento that I'm such a fan of. That's din, of course. So you can see by layering these sounds, by treating them in different ways, by mixing them at different volumes, you can create your own compositions, you know, from both organic sources like a guitar or your vocals or bongos or whatever, and from things inside the computer itself, mixing these seamlessly in a natural way. Okay, and so now we can see this is something I haven't introduced before, which are synthesized natural sounds. We're going to see at the end of the chorus, I bring in a piano. I don't own a piano. This is software. Yes. It's a piece of software called QSynth, which loads sound fonts. Anybody familiar with sound fonts? Yeah, they're basically exactly like fonts, except for sound. They're, you know, one file with a collection of other individual sound files in them. So a piano sound font, somebody may have gone to their piano and recorded themselves hitting the low C quietly, and then a little harder and a little harder, and moved up for every single key, package that into a file, and then I can hook my keyboard in and tell it to control that application, and it will play those sounds, depending on how hard I hit the keys. And so that allows me, without any piano, to have natural sounding piano.
app loaded, that box pack?
It was an application called Qtip. Okay. I'm probably not going to show it just because I don't want to spend too much time on it. But basically, it's sort of like Zin, except sounds that aren't being created on the fly. It's being played back from these sample banks. You can get tons of them for free. Tons of them come with your distro. If you do a yum search or an app search, you can typically just search for a sound font or SF2, and you'll find a ton of them. Yes?
So I'm asking this on behalf of the guy who's going to ask me this tomorrow.
Okay.
How much of this stuff do you think is available for Mac OS X?
Interesting question. A lot of it. So Jack, the low latency audio subsystem we've been working with, will work on any NICs. It'll work on Solaris, it'll work on BSD, it'll work on Linux, and it will work on Mac OS X. Ardor has been ported to Mac OS X. This company called, I want to say they're called Harrison, but I might be wrong there, actually sponsored the Ardor project for a few years and helped port it to Mac OS X. Some of the smaller tools like Zin, I'm not sure, but the two biggest ingredients at very least are definitely available for Mac OS X.
So follow up on that, how does Mac OS X handle the low latency audio?
You don't need the kernel. The Jack version of Mac OS X was written by a different group of people. I think it doesn't perform as well on the same caliber of hardware, but Mac OS X also has its own low latency audio API, which is Core Audio. So I'm not sure if Jack on Mac OS X is just a wrapper around Core Audio. That's something that would do some research. I actually hadn't thought of it until now. Yes?
Someone has the same question. Does this work well on Windows?
I don't know. I haven't used a Windows box in a long time. The problem is a lot of this stuff, so everything depends on Jack, and Jack really depends on some kind of NICs under the cover. So I don't know to what degree. I know Hydrogen has a Windows port, but my knowledge beyond that is spotty. Anything else, guys? Yeah.
Apologies if you talked about this when I was set up. There's a lot going on here, mm-hmm. right? And you said computers are pretty powerful, right? But what happens when you get close to overloading the system?
So keep an eye on up at the top here. Bring this over. We can see buffers, cache, and DSP. DSP is the load on your computer that's being incurred by running the application. I think it stands for Digital Signal Processor, I think. So DSP is how Jack and how Jack applications tell you that how much you're utilizing your system. They call it DSP load. You can see here idling, doing nothing, we're hovering at about 20%.
Actually,
we can't see that. Oh, sorry guys, hold on.
There we go.
Here we go. So we're kind of idling at about 20%. The reason why is the effects that are running. Effects run even if you aren't passing audio through them. So you incur sort of an idle performance hit just for having effects. They're not super expensive, but they add up. Let's take a look at the effects buses over here in the mixer.
Can you apply the effects in kind of a post-processing fashion to not incur such a penalty while you're mixing and then?
One technique that I've heard other musicians use is they write and record at ultra-low latency. So there's a proportional relationship between the latency that you're shooting for and the DSP load you're going to incur with plugins. So if you want to mix with a lot of plugins, you can then save a preset in Jack maybe at 50 milliseconds and do your mixing there and double, triple, or quadruple the amount of effects you can apply. So there's a lot of wiggle room there. Very good question. Anybody else? So we can see here, this is the channel, the mixer. Remember, each one of these channels maps to a channel that contains audio. This is the fader right here. This controls the volume of the audio source in that channel. These guys up here above it are effects. Okay? So for example, we can see in this distorted guitar channel, I have an amp, an EQ, an auto-off, and a plate reverb. Okay? So let's take a look. Let's deconstruct that and take a look at what that looks like. I can remember how to use a computer. Okay. So in the second chorus, I bring in a distorted guitar that has sort of a wah effect on it. And we can take a look at that right here. and I can solo that. So that's electric guitar. But I've got a couple different effects. Let's do that. Let's play with a couple concepts at once. Let's loop this section so that we can work on it and talk about it. So I'm going to create a loop region here. And now it's just going to play that region over there. Let's go to the channel mixer. This is the channel we're working on. Let's take off that auto lock. See the change it's having, what it's doing with the sound? And notice that dial going up and down? That's a recording of me moving that dial. So I was listening to the song, moving that dial. Ardour recorded it for me. Now it's playing back the performance of me playing that with that dial. At the same time, it's playing back the performance of me playing the part. Let's deconstruct the sound. Let's take off the lock. The next thing is to talk about. Here now. You see that I was feeding the computer a completely clean signal, and it is building this entire sick guitar tone out of nothing. This, so you can use plugins directly within Ardour. Rack-a-Rack is more of a lock. I think it's more of a live call. It would be good for somebody who wants to replace a guitar effects processor live or playing the strings. You could easily record the output from Rack-a-Rack into here. The way I record is I record as dry a signal as possible, and then I pile the effects on in post-processing. Like it allows me to tweak the sound further without getting married to a specific tone. Just in case I need to. You could. That would be a very advanced operation, but you can send the output from one specific channel via jack into another application. Yes.
You repeat back.
Okay. He asked whether or not you could take the output from a single channel and route that out to another sound processing application like Rack-a-Rack. And the answer is yes. You could. It's an advanced operation, but you can take the output rather than from the entire application, but from a single track, output that to another application, and then bring it back into another channel in Ardour. Yes?
Does Ardour have inserts on the channel?
Inserts are not something I use much. It does. You can do inserts and buses. You could do that, yes.
What is an insert?
I don't use inserts when I record.
You
want to explain
it? External effect in line, it's basically like playing through that, but then you can dynamically control it.
Yeah, it's not something I use much simply because we can see that we can put the effects there at the top before the channel. And because we're in software, inserts do really well with groups. So you can group channels together and aggregate their output into a bus, and then you could put that through. So let's say you had your hi-hats and your bass drum and snare all in separate channels, you could then put those into a bus and use an insert to run that through, let's say, like an EQ and a reverb or something like that. But so what I was getting at by showing all this stuff is, you know, you can take a very dry signal and turn it into something completely different just by it. So you can hear that over the song by unmuting here. So I want to show you one more thing.
Adam, the track of you moving the slider or whatever physical thing you had, can you just like lay out that track, kind of control like a spline, like put points on a graph?
That's exactly what this is down here.
You just physically place those points with a mouse or something.
You can. So let's say you did a performance of, you know, an automation performance of a specific, you know, parameter of an effect that you loved, except for this one part at the end. You could then go in and adjust that by hand here. You can see I use automation all over the place. You know, I have here for a fade in. So like here, I bring in another guitar part and I attempt to fade it in beforehand. I don't think I did it quite right, but you know, we can see I do it here. Okay. another, yet another different guitar sound. All things in the software. Yeah. Oops, sorry. That particular amp also models feedback.
So that automation track you recorded, did you use your hardware mixer to
do
that?
So what I did, I kind of wish I brought it to show. I didn't know if there would be a good way to show it because it sits on the table. But basically, you can hold down control and middle click any control in Ardor. Doesn't matter what it is. Anything. And you can map it to any. I might be able to.
No.
Yeah. I'll try to show it, I think. Let me go to shot. I won't try too hard. I'll try a little bit. So we can see Ardor has placed itself in Jack. And I can take the Key Studio out to the Ardor control in. Oh. I don't have a middle click.
two fingers both left and right.
Oh, really? Thanks, guys. Let's see if this will work. Operate controller now. So check that out. So by messing with this controller, I'm now controlling that. And I could let's bring down the automation, and we can say show the fader. And here I can say right. Let's bring it all the way down. Well, let's hold it. And let's record myself. You know what? My mouse is messing with me, guys. I'm going to have to not show that, I think, and switch to a USB mouse. Sometimes when I use the trackpad for a while, it starts to get weird. Sorry. I won't be able to demo that part. Sorry, guys.
It's a hardware problem, right? Not software.
I'm not sure. I've been trying to figure it out.
Is that a real-time kernel thing?
No, I've had this problem. It might actually be a problem with my laptop. I don't like to admit that. It might be. So we're going to switch back here. So I'm not going to be able to show that because I had to unplug the keyboard. But basically what I could do is I could throw the automation for that control into write mode. And then if I play the song, anything I do will get recorded. And I can put it back into play mode, and it will play back that automation. Yes?
What type of mixer do you have? And does it have a USB on it?
Yes. I use something called a Korg Nano Control. I think it's called a Nano Control. It might be called a Micro Control. It's some SI unit and control. And it's just got like 16 faders on it and a couple of different buttons. So you could, you know, you could toggle, like you could assign, let's say, mute on a channel to a specific button on it, and then the fader, and you can mess with the mute and the fader at the same time. So you can record multiple instances of automation at the same time.
Is that a standard USB type of interface?
All this stuff is totally standard.
I just wondered if I took like an analog game controller, if there's a way to interface the analog stick to
that. So one thing I did was I took the Rock Band drums, and I was able to route those into Hydrogen. There was a little application that the name escapes me now, but there's a little application I had to download that basically listens for the USB events for the Rock Band drum kit and then turn those into audio, MIDI out data for Jack. And then, you know, you can play the drums, which is pretty cool.
Even if it's not native, it's easy to patch it.
As long as it's even easy to let, you know, you could look at Dev USB, whatever, look at, you know, troll that, looking for the values coming from it, and then you could write a simple driver to output data to Jack. If I was going to do a crossfade between two channels, I would assign each the fader on the two channels in question to different physical controls and move them like that. Doesn't mean if you ever think there isn't a way to do something with free software, it just means you don't know how to do it. There's probably a way. I haven't tried to do that myself.
Yeah, this building
for us is an order. There is? Okay. Are there any other questions, guys?
You mentioned you're writing a driver for Jack. Is Jack friendly to write stuff for?
I personally have not written anything for it, but it's very well documented. And I've badgered the developers in IRC multiple times. because there's some confusion around exactly how to use Jack, how to set it up properly, what you should be shooting for, all that kind of stuff. And so there have been times where I've jumped on Pound Jack and on Freenode and asked questions, and they've been very responsive, very nice.
I think you were going to show us something about the DSP load while you turned effect zone off.
I mean, I can. I don't. Let me see. Yeah, if I do.
Can we actually skip that because we're getting close to 9 o'clock, and I would like to see the kernel stuff that you've been.
All right. So let me. That's actually right about basically the end. Sorry if I'm running long. That's right about the end of really the software stuff. What I wanted to show you at the end here were resources that you could take to go out and learn about this stuff on your own outside. So let me show you a few of those very quickly. Am I connected? Yes, I am. So.
I mean, is it available online anywhere? Have you got the URL?
Yes, I'm going to have a couple things that I can show you guys. So first, oh look, Mega Man. So the first thing I'm going to show you guys is, So this is something new that came with Fedora 14. It came out of the Google Summer of Code. This is the Fedora 14 Musician's Guide. This is super cool. So if you want to use Fedora, this guide can show you, what packages to install, how to install them, what yum commands to run, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. This is very, very, very handy. You can see it's got a whole bunch of stuff here, sound card connections, sample rates. It introduces stuff about the individual pieces of software, and it introduces just general concepts that may be helpful. So I'm a fan of just Google it, so just Google Fedora Musician's Guide.
Hey, Fedora.
Yeah, and it will be the first one. The next thing would be the Ubuntu Studio. Ubuntu Studio is kind of like a spin of Ubuntu that comes with all the audio stuff built in, and they do have a live CD. They also do have a good wiki that can tell you all about how to configure the different things and what packages to install for the Ubuntu world. Now, the last thing I'd like to show you guys is something that I put together.
This is
a free and open source audio knowledge base. And so what I decided, part of my job at Red Hat is when I'm solving technical problems, I document those just in time in a knowledge base. And I decided I could do this at home for music. So what I've done here is compiled a list of a couple hundred articles of just problems that I've solved when I'm over the course of me trying to learn this stuff. And so there's just stuff here like you go into Ardor. How can I control Ardor's knobs and faders with a MIDI control surface? And I say what the question is in the context and exactly how to do it. An example here, what you would ask for, how can I build my own real-time kernel from source code? And it gives you step-by-step, I did this, verified this morning, I've done this like 3 times now in the past 2 days, step-by-step how to do it in both Fedora and maybe how to do it in another distro if you use a different distro. This isn't all the information in the world, but it's at least helpful for getting started. Between Ubuntu and the Fedora Musician's Guide and my knowledge base, hopefully you can find a lot. And then, of course, Freenode. Pound Open Source Musicians and Pound Ubuntu Studio have both been very helpful. And then the channels for the individual projects themselves. Okay?
What's your backend for this, KB?
This is hosted on Laughing Squid. They do like Linux cloud hosting stuff. And this is WordPress. Yes. Yeah, it's a KBase theme. Yeah, I went out, I had a really specific way I wanted it to look, so I actually ended up going out and purchasing it. I didn't want, only the graphics or some, most of all the code that actually touches WordPress is all GPL. And so this has a lot, and the other thing is you can just sign up and create articles for this. This is completely open. You can just sign up, and if you're working through problems, I hope that you'll create articles. If I'm wrong on something, this email request goes right to my phone. if there's something wrong or if there's something incorrect or if it could be done better, please let me know. And so with that, really, I think that wraps things up. I want to thank you guys very much for listening to me and for checking this stuff out. And my name is DialogZ80 on Freenode, adam@linkedlistcorruption.com. This is linkedlistcorruption.com/audio-kbase. That's my kbase. You can hit me on email there. And thank you very much.
Thank you. This is not this on. Can I get a? Did he kill both of them?
I have one question. The question is how much of this is spilling over into the professional side?
Unfortunately, not a lot yet. I just started.
Well,
I'm trying. There has.
And to answer the question quickly, this happens a lot in and also in animation. Professionals are using this stuff. This is much louder than I had expected. Professionals are using both this audio stuff and in terms of 3D animation and whatnot behind the scenes to do rapid prototyping of things, to do demos, to do rough cuts. So they will use this stuff because they can use it anywhere, because they can use it at home, because they can share it. They'll use it to produce stuff which then goes to final production, probably on something else, but maybe not. It depends on the studio. And the other thing is, too, that you probably aren't hearing about the many places that it's being used because a lot of studios are very, you know, cards close to the chest, how they're doing it.
How can you charge a lot of money to your client?
Right. How can you charge tons of money? Right.
What kind of interoperability do these patches have with something like Pro Tools? If you have some fellow musicians who are using proprietary stuff.
I know that Ardor is able to either import or understand Pro Tools files, but I don't know whether or not that import is perfect. It's sort of like OpenOffice in Word. I know it can, but I'm sure there are problems.
So the main reason I'm actually up here, if there are any other questions, maybe you can meet up at the bar at Bava. The bar at Bava, which is right up the road on Aventury.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Mission Valley Shopping Center.
Okay.
Right.
But before you actually get out of here, if you can help by putting tables against the wall with the other tables and chairs at the back. And any trash that we've got, if we can throw it away, and how many.
And we'll make one more announcement that next month's meeting will not be here. It'll be a flat space. Go to trilog.org, and we have details there. Also, details about the meeting that is 1 week from today.
Okay.
I think that's what you want.
Time I come across his name and the email or
Can you hang up the phone, Justin? The phone apparently has to be hung up manually.
Yes, but a non-battery.
And who was it that won
okay.
the car?
Go back through, oh, yeah.